Hi, folks. Welcome to the Smartass Historian. I am, as always, the great white snark, Scotty J. Seated next to me is the Reverend Jeff.
Hallelujah. Christmas time.
Oh, God, yeah. See, my kids are used to doing Christmas later because of money situations.
Yeah.
And my kids, you know, Alex, I can get him, you know, a $50 PlayStation card and he's happy.
Yeah.
You know, I can give him, you know, a $50 PlayStation card. He goes buy some DLC or whatever he wants. Dana, I give her some money to help her with her bills or whatnot.
I want to make sure that my son has a good Christmas, my wife has a good Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas to me is tax return time.
Yeah. Well, and I said there's only
then
one.
I can buy something I would like.
Right. There's like one game that I want this year for my PlayStation. The rest I want, like Barnes & Noble gift cards.
Hmm.
I want Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, I've been watching the reviews on that. It doesn't look like too bad of a game, but...
No, well, the main character is Cameron Monaghan from...
Shameless.
Shameless and Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to see how his character is as a Jedi. And also, I like Star Wars games. Oh, I forgot to tell you when we were off mic, but... And she doesn't listen to this show, so I can say what the fuck I want.
That's always good.
Well, my brother's girlfriend told me the other day that she doesn't listen to podcasts because she thinks they're stupid.
Yeah, you told me that
the
other day when we were on the phone. Yeah, that's stupid. It's like, makes no sense. It's podcasts are like, except for like getting on the internet to like go to it, is like literally like listening to the radio. Except it's on the internet.
Yeah, also.
And like, most people didn't listen to this much. And it's like, you know, like talk radio.
Yeah. This has become the new talk radio format.
Yeah, basically. I mean, and people didn't used to listen to, like, I would never listen to talk radio on, like, the radio,
right. But
I would listen to a podcast.
Right.
And for some reason, I guess making it on the internet is supposed to be better.
Oh, before we get into the show.
But there's a million of them out there now.
Oh, yeah.
And you could find which one
about
a topic you that you like.
You can find what you like. Oh, before we get into today's show... The podcasting world had a death recently.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a show that I listened to, The Dirty Bits of History with Tawny Plattis.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, George, died.
Oh, okay.
George was like 28.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, how'd he die?
He got he's been having health problems all this. Originally, he had health problems with his heart and everything, and the problems continue on. He caught a respiratory, from what I understand, it's like a respiratory virus.
Yeah.
And...
Well, the reason why I asked, you know, 28 is like, what do you do? Like, get killed base jumping? Or
No, it was, you
most
know, respiratory.
Most 28-year-olds don't go by natural causes.
Right, and I talked to him a few times offline about stuff, and he was a nice guy, you know. So I'd like to, you know, send condolences out to Tawny, and I still follow her on Facebook, and she's going to be redoing her show.
Yeah.
She wants to travel across the country and talk to people about how they coped with grieving.
Hmm.
So I think she's calling herself the Witty Widow now.
Oh, that's cool.
So, you know, I wish her luck on this and give her condolences on the loss of a good guy. And George was also her producer and engineer for her show.
Okay.
And she's also a voiceover artist, so he helped her out a lot.
Oh, okay.
All right. Enough sadness in our lives. Oh, we got a good one for you today, folks. We're going to talk about the Electoral College.
Yay. Because most people don't know what it is, what it does, or how it works.
Right. And
a lot of people say that it's good.
Some people say it's good, some people say it's bad. I just heard recently, I was listening to the Thomas Jefferson Hour, and they were talking to Joseph Ellis, who's like the guy for the Revolutionary period.
Mm-hmm.
I've read a couple of his books, and I would read more. But he said one way we could fix the electoral process is to get rid of the college.
Yeah, I mean, because what the Electoral College is you're, when you make a vote, when you vote for, like, president, say, you're basically not even voting for the president. You're voting to pick an elector, which is a person that votes for the president, basically, which gives you the points in the state to give the president those points. You know, it's really stupid. It should just be, like, I mean, if you're sitting in a car with your family and someone goes, hey, who wants pizza or who wants burgers? And you say, hey, well, five people pick, you know, this and two people pick that. It's like, well, the two people don't win, you know?
Yeah, you've never been in the car with Amanda and Charlotte.
Well, yeah, I will. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, okay. That's their electoral process.
No, it was basically like dealing with the South in the 1800s.
Yeah.
All right.
Your vote don't count.
No. No, it's basically, fuck it, I'll give in so you don't fucking have a seizure.
Yeah.
Compromise was the key word in our relationship.
Yeah.
Compromise with them.
Yeah, no shit.
Okay. Now, when the Constitutional Convention met in 1787, they used the Virginia Plan as the basis for discussions, as the Virginia proposal was the first. Now, the Virginia Plan called for the Congress to elect a president. Okay. Makes sense. If I remember right, being at Independence Hall, Washington was the president of the Continental Convention.
Okay.
Because his chair, which sits up in, if you look at Independence Hall and you see how the chairs and everything are arranged, there's a table up at the head, and there's a chair. Well, Washington sat in that chair, and it's the only original piece of furniture left from that era.
Huh.
I also seen a couple other chairs Washington sat in.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, one's at the White House Visitor Center, and one's in the Smithsonian the Smithsonian Museum of American History.
Hmm.
And when I first saw the one at the White House, Visitor Center, I went, this cushion held George Washington's farts.
Yeah.
Alex said the same thing when we saw the one at the Smithsonian. He was like, Dad, do you think George Washington farted in that chair?
You can almost smell the history.
Right. It smells like beans. So, delegates from a majority of states agreed to this mode of election. After being debated, however, delegates came to oppose nomination by Congress for the reason that it could violate the separation of powers. James Wilson then made motions for the electors for the purpose of choosing the president. Now, later in the convention, a committee formed to work out various details, including the mode of election of the president, including final recommendations for the electors, a group of people apportioned among the states in the same number as their representatives in Congress. So this formula, which had been resolved in lengthy debates resulting in the Connecticut Compromise and the Three-Fifths Compromise, the Three-Fifths Compromise, one of the worst things that ever happened. Now, but chosen by each state in such a manner as its legislature may direct. Now, committee member Gouverneur Morris explained the reason for the change, among others, and there were fears of intrigue if the president were chosen by a small group of men who met together regularly, as well as concerns for the independence of the president if he were elected by the Congress. This whole, you know, well, they had a fear back then that if you give the president too much power, he'd become a king, which they fought to get away from.
Mm.
But there was like a group who wanted a weak central government and the states to have more rights. Then there was a group who wanted a strong central government. The same arguments we deal with now, basically. So once the Electoral College had been decided on, several delegates, among them were like Gouverneur Morris and James Madison, openly recognized its ability to protect the election process from cabal corruption. Oh, dear God. Yeah. Well, let's snicker at that one, folks.
Yeah.
Intrigue and faction. Now, some delegates, including James Wilson and James Madison, preferred popular election of the executive, where the popular vote comes into play. Madison acknowledged that while a popular vote would be ideal, it would be difficult to get consensus on the proposal given the prevalence of slavery in the South.
Well, that's why they didn't want it, was because of slavery.
Yeah.
Because if black people had the vote, then of course they're, you know...
Right.
No one's going to vote for, you know... Like, well, at the time it would have been a Democrat.
Federalist and...
No black person would vote for, no ex-slave or whatever would vote for a Democrat. If given the choice, you know, between the two. Of course they're going to vote for a Republican at that time.
Democratic Republican, which was Jefferson's party.
Yeah.
Now, there was one difficulty, however, of a serious nature attending an immediate choice by the people. The right of suffrage was more diffusive in the northern than the southern states, and the latter could have no influence in the election on the score of Negroes. The substitution of electors obviated this difficulty and seemed, on the whole, to be liable to the fewest objections. Now, the convention approved the committee's Electoral College proposal with minor modifications, on September 6, 1787. Delegates from the states with smaller populations or limited land area, such as Connecticut, New Jersey, and Maryland, generally favored the Electoral College with some consideration for states. At the compromise providing for a runoff among the top five candidates, the small states supposed that the House of Representatives, with each state delegation casting one vote, would decide most elections. That's what happens now. If there's a tie in, like, say you and I were running and we tied for votes, then the decision would go to the House.
Yeah. A tie on the popular vote or a tie on the electoral points or electoral votes?
I think it was a tie in the popular.
Okay.
Because if you look at, like, the election of 1800...
Yeah, okay.
Jefferson and Burr tied for votes.
Yeah, okay, they tied in the popular... Because whoever wins the popular vote gets the points for that state.
Right. So, like, when Jefferson and Burr tied in 1800, well, then it had to go to the House to decide which one of those two would become president. And there was some, you know...
You see, that's how confusing the system is. We were just talking, and I got confused, and I know how it works.
Right. And then, you know, you go to something like what Jefferson and Burr did. Okay, it goes to the House. But then in the House, people start wheeling and dealing, going...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we don't want to... Like with Burr, they're like, we don't want Aaron Burr to be president. We want Jefferson to be president.
And see, a lot of... And another thing is... A lot of the states, when whoever wins the electoral votes for that state, the electors have to vote that way. So, say, I win the votes in that state because, or I win the electoral points in that state because I had the popular vote. Well, the electors don't have to vote for me. They can vote for you, even though they're
supposed to vote for you.
Should vote for me,
right?
Because they have the option.
That's That's happened before.
Well, no, that happens in like 24 states now.
Yeah.
In like 24 of the states, they can vote either way. And the other 26 state or whatever, they can vote. They have to vote the way it goes. You know what I mean? Whoever wins that state, the electors have to vote that way.
Right.
But how much sense does that make for 24 of the states in the union to be able to vote either way? That's not... If the person wins that state, you should be able... The electors should have to vote for that, you know. That's the only way, you know, I just don't... It's just confusing how each state can have different rules. That's where it gets frustrating and people get pissed about it.
Right. Well, in the Federalist Papers, James Madison explained his views on the selection of the president and the Constitution. In Federalist Number 39, Madison argued the Constitution was designed to be a mixture of state-based and population-based government. Congress would have two houses, the state-based Senate and the population-based House of Representatives. Meanwhile, the president would be elected by a mixture of the two modes. Now, Hamilton explained in Federalist Number 68 what he believed were the key advantages to the Electoral College. The electors come directly from the people and from them alone for that purpose only and for that time only. This avoided a party-run legislature or a permanent body that could be influenced by foreign interest before each election. Oh, Hamilton.
Well, it's not foreign interest, it's rich interest.
Well, at the time, they were more concerned about...
Well, yeah, but then... It might be a problem nowadays, but...
Right, but like, back then, they were more concerned of like, you know, France influencing an election.
Yeah. As if that could happen.
Well, France was our ally during the Revolution, but just
giving them the go.
You know, like Jefferson was a big. I think the word I'm trying to think of is like a Francophile. He loved France.
Oh, so, yeah, that's the right word.
So, like, people were kind of concerned. Like, okay, well, what if France tried to influence the election to get Jefferson in office? Or John Adams was more in favor of how the British style. So they were more concerned like with the two big ones at the time, England and France.
Well, that might be the reason for Tangerine Caligula then, because he must be a Russophile or whatever.
Oh, God.
Because
I like, never heard that before.
How people love... You know, you said a Francophile because they love France. Oh, so it must be a Russophile because he loves fucking Putin.
Dude.
And Russia.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
What?
I've never heard of Tangerine Caligula.
Tangerine Caligula. I just come up with that off the top.
Oh, my God, that's hilarious. We ought to make that into a T-shirt. Okay. Now, Hamilton explained the election was to take place among all the states, so no corruption in any state could taint the great body of the people in their selection.
Did you say taint?
Yes, I said taint. Taint ass and a taint pussy.
Taint gonna happen.
Okay, now the choice was to be made by a majority of the Electoral College, as majority rule is critical to the principles of Republican government. Hamilton argued that the electors meeting in the state capitals were able to have information unavailable to the general public. Hamilton also argued that since no federal officeholder could be an elector, none of the electors could be beholden to any presidential candidate.
So that's why it's always like the governor's like nephew or some shit. Or, you know,
the governor's housekeeper's brother's son.
Yeah, or some shit. It's like some spoiled rich kid or... Some,
right.
You know, like that's the county judge's, like...
illegitimate baby mama.
It's fucking stupid.
Another consideration was the decision would be made without tumult and disorder as it would be a broad-based one made simultaneously in various locales where the decision makers could deliberate responsibly or reasonably, not in one place where decision makers could be threatened or intimidated.
Yeah, more like, how much is he going to pay me? Okay, we'll vote his way.
Dude, at the local Waffle House. I love Waffle House. That would be good. If the Electoral College did not achieve a decisive majority, then the House of Representatives was to choose the president from among the top five candidates, ensuring selection of a presiding officer administering the laws would have both ability and good character. Hamilton was also concerned about somebody unqualified, but with a talent for low intrigue and the little arts of popularity attaining high office. God, he picked that one right. I bet right now Hamilton is rolling in his fucking grave over what's happening now.
Probably.
Hamilton will probably crawl out of his grave and, you know, smack a Tangerine Caligula with a dueling glove, and that'd be Andrew Jackson. That man will duel at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
We should cover some of his duels, because I love the story about the guy who tried to assassinate him and both guns misfired.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Dude tried to assassinate Andrew Jackson, had two guns on him, they both misfired, and Jackson beat the man senseless with his walking stick.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that one. That's right.
Andrew Jackson's his bodyguards or something, they had to pull him off the man because he was giving him a sound thrashing.
Jesus.
Now, additionally, in Federalist Number 10, Madison argued against an interested and overbearing majority and the mischiefs of faction in an electoral system. He defined a faction as a number of citizens, whether amounting to a majority or minority of the whole, who are united and actuated by some common impulse of passion or of interest, adverse to the rights of other citizens, or to the permanent and aggregated interests of the community. God damn, Madison. What was then called Republican government, representative democracy, what we're supposed to have, combined with the principles of federalism, would countervail against factions. Madison further postulated in Federalist Number 10 that the greater the population and expanse of the republic, the more difficult factions would be in organizing due to such issues as sectionalism. You know, we think that the sectional differences that happened in the Civil War happened during, like, that period.
Yeah.
No, sectional differences was going on even at this point. Madison was actually the first one to notice that in the Constitutional Convention, the party lines are breaking up North and South.
Yeah.
Free and, you know, Northern states and Southern states. I can't say free states because the Northern states had slavery at this point. But it was more prevalent down South.
Yeah.
Now, although the United States Constitution refers to electors and electors, neither the phrase the Electoral College or any other name is used to describe the electors collectively. It was not until the early 19th century that the name Electoral College came into general usage as the collective designated for the electors selected to cast votes for the president and vice president. The phrase was first written in the federal law in 1845, and today the term appears in 3 U.S.C. Section 4 in the section heading and in the text as the College of Electors. So, historically, the state legislatures are the ones who select the electors in more than half of the states.
Yeah.
All right. That practice changed during the early 19th century as the states extended the right to vote to wider segments of the population.
Mm-hmm.
By 1832, only South Carolina had not transitioned to popular election. Goddamn South Carolina. Fucking troublemakers. I can look at any problem in the 19th century, and I can trace it back to South Carolina.
Yeah.
Bunch of fucking stubborn assholes. I have no family that lives in South Carolina, so I can say that. Now, since 1880, the electors in every state had been chosen based on popular election held on Election Day. The popular election for electors means that the president and vice president are, in effect, chosen through indirect election by the citizens.
Yeah, indirect meaning not at all.
Since the mid-19th century, when all electors had been popularly chosen, the Electoral College has elected the candidate who receives the most popular votes nationwide, except 2016.
Well, no.
There's been some, but I mean, look at the more recent one.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying.
Right, and I know there's more. Okay. Except in four elections that this happened.
Okay.
1876,
okay.
Which was the election of Rutherford B. Hayes.
Where he got more electoral votes than popular votes.
Well, and there was also a backroom deal with Hayes that he said he went to the Southern Democrats and said, hey, if you throw your votes to me,
mm-hmm.
I'll pull federal troops out of the South and let you guys run your affairs. Which was the end of Reconstruction. 1888, I can't remember who was running in 1888. 2000 with W and Gore.
Yeah, that's still, you know.
And like I said, in 2016.
Yeah.
Hillary had the popular vote, but Tangerine Caligula got the Electoral College. Which, and I think in that one, I honestly think that they didn't want her in the presidency.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah.
So they threw their votes
to... Yeah, whoever the electors are, were like, no, we don't want Hillary.
Yeah. In 1824, there were six states in which electors were legislatively appointed rather than popularly elected, so the true national popular vote is uncertain. The electors failed to select a winning candidate, so the matter was decided by the House.
Mm-hmm.
1824. I want to say that was John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson.
Hmm.
I could be wrong.
Hold on. Alexa, who was running for the presidency in 1824?
The major candidates in the 1824 U.S. presidential election were John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson, William H. Crawford, and Henry Clay.
There you go.
Yeah, I was right on two of them. Okay, so in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 3 of the Constitution, now that provided the original plan by which the electors voted for president. Under the original plan, each elector cast two votes for president, and electors did not vote for vice president because at the time, it was, okay, whoever got the most votes was president, whoever got the second most was vice president. So it's like, okay, gold medal, president, silver medal, vice president.
Yeah.
Go sit in the Senate. Because that's all really the vice president does.
Yeah, it's just a...
You're just there in case the president dies.
You're a place setter. You're just like...
And also, you're there to break the tie vote in the Senate.
Yeah. Except for when it came to Dick Cheney.
Oh, yeah, Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney was
not an idle vice president.
Oh, no. When he wasn't shooting his friends in the fucking face, he was running the presidency.
That was Lord Sidious to fucking Bush's Darth Vader. Bush was Darth Vader. Even though...
I would go more Tyrannus.
Even though... No. Because even though Bush had the big fancy shiny suit like fucking Vader, it was Dick Cheney that was running the show. because Bush let him have all that power.
Okay. Now, the original plan for the Electoral College was based upon several assumptions and anticipations of the framers of the Constitution. Now, a choice of the president would reflect the sense of the people at a particular time, not the dictates of a faction in a pre-established body such as Congress or the state legislatures. And independent of the influence of foreign powers, as we said before. The choice would be made decisively with a full and fair expression of the public will, but also maintaining as little opportunity as possible for tumult and disorder. Okay, individual electors would be elected by citizens on a district-by-district basis. Voting for president would include the widest electorate allowed in each state. Each presidential elector would exercise independent judgment when voting, deliberating with the most complete information available in a system that, over time, tended to bring about a good administration of the laws passed by Congress. Candidates would not pair together on the same ticket with assumed placements toward each office of president and vice president. At the time, they were each voted individually.
Yeah.
The system as designed would rarely produce a winner, thus sending the presidential election to the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, 1800, good example. You know, and the other four that we mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, you get a tie, especially like in 1800, there was a tie between Jefferson and Burr. Nobody could vote, so they threw it to the House. And there was some backroom dealing going on for Jefferson to get into office, but Jefferson got in. Now, according to the text of Article 2, however, each state government was free to have its own plan for selecting its electors, and the Constitution does not explicitly require states to popularly elect their electors. Several methods for selecting the electors will be explained.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. God. It's like the emergence of the political parties and nationally coordinated election campaigns soon complicated matters in the elections of 1796 and 1800. 1796, the Federalist Party candidate John Adams won the presidential election. Finishing in second place was the Democratic-Republican candidate Jefferson. Now, the Federalist opponent who became Jefferson became Adams' vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this resulted in the president and vice president being of different political parties. Oops. Oops. I did it again.
Yeah.
1800, the Democratic-Republican Party again nominated Jefferson for president and also nominated Aaron Burr for vice. Now, after the electors voted, as we've said before, they tied. And they actually tied with 73 electoral votes.
Hmm.
So since the ballots did not distinguish votes between president and vice president, every ballot cast for Burr technically counted as a vote for him to become president, despite Jefferson clearly being the party's first choice. Lacking a clear winner by constitutional standards, the election had to be decided by the House pursuant of the Constitution's contingency election provision. So, having already lost the presidential contest, Federalist Party representatives in the lame duck House session seized upon the opportunity to embarrass their opposition by attempting to elect Burr over Jefferson.
Hmm.
The House deadlocked for 35 ballots as neither candidate received the necessary majority vote. Jefferson achieved electoral victory on the 36th ballot, only after Federalist Party leader Hamilton, who disfavored Burr's personal character more than Jefferson's policies, had made his known preference for Jefferson. And look how that worked out for Hamilton.
Yeah.
Click, click. Boom! Okay, so responding to the problems from those elections, Congress proposed on December 9th, 1803, and three-fourths of the states ratified by June 15th, 1804, the 12th Amendment. Starting with the 1804 election, the amendment requires electors to cast separate ballots for president and vice president, replacing the system outlined in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 3. So the 12th Amendment changed all of that.
Yeah.
Which I can see why they came up with the amendment. You know? It was one of these situations where they're like, okay, this works in theory, but in practice we've already had this happen twice and it didn't quite work out right.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to make an amendment to fix this shit.
Yeah.
So Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 states, each state shall appoint in such a manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. But no senator or representative or person holding office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Okay. Sounds reasonable enough.
So it has to be someone who doesn't hold an office.
Right. But we're also allowed as many electors as we have representatives and senators. Now, if I understand this correctly, we get two senators, one from each party,
mm-hmm.
and the representatives are based on our population. If my high school civics class is correct.
Yeah.
Now, Hamilton described the founding father's view of how electors would be chosen. According to Hamilton, a small number of persons selected by their fellow citizens from the general mass will be most likely to possess the information and discernment requisite to such complicated tasks. Now, they assumed this would take place district by district. That plan was carried out by many states until the 1880s. For example, in Massachusetts in 1820, the rule stated, the people shall vote ballot on which shall be designated who is voted as an elector for the district.
Hmm.
All right. In other words, the people did not place the name of a candidate for a president on the ballot. Instead, they voted for the local elector who they trusted later to cast a responsible vote for president. Okay, I get that. Makes sense. Some states reasoned that the favorite presidential candidate among the people in their state would have a much better chance if all the electors selected by the state were sure to vote the same way, like a general ticket,
mm-hmm.
of electors pledged to a party candidate. So the state of elector or the slate of electors chosen by the state were no longer free agents, independent thinkers, or deliberative representatives. They became voluntary party lackeys and intellectual non-entities. Love that title. So once one state took that strategy, others felt compelled to follow suit in order to compete for the strongest influence on the election. Now, when Madison and Hamilton, two of the most important architects of the Electoral College, saw this strategy being taken by some states, they protested. Madison and Hamilton both made it clear this approach violated the spirit of the Constitution. Now, according to Hamilton, the selection of the president should be made by men most capable of analyzing the qualities adapted to the situation or to the station.
Well, a lot of them didn't think that poor people or people nope. who were like
non-property holders should
yeah,
vote.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean,
right. So at the time, it was only the landed gentry that could vote.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that it was the rich that were all like, well, I wouldn't want him voting for, you know, because he, you know, who is he, you know?
Right, but then when they started changing it to all males.
Yeah, exactly.
Then, you know, it was no longer in the hands of the landed gentry.
The fact is that the rich don't want the direction of this country in the hands of the people or the masses.
Right.
They want the direction of this country in the hands of, well, nowadays it's the corporations.
I think we should become a corporation so we can influence elections.
Well, corporations can be considered a person now, so I mean, is that really work? I mean,
you raise a valid point.
I don't know if you can.
I am the corporation of Scotty J. Enterprises.
If a corporation can be considered a person, can a person be considered a corporation?
Hmm.
I mean, seriously.
Right. So according to Hamilton, the electors were to analyze the list of potential presidents and select the best one. He also used the term deliberate. Hamilton considered a pre-pledged elector to violate the spirit of Article 2 of the Constitution insofar as electors could make no analysis or deliberate concerning the candidates. Or deliberate, sorry. Not deliberate. Oh, fuck.
Here we go again.
Well, when you have a high-pitched squeaking voice waking you up every morning...
High-pitched squeaking voice.
Mm-hmm. She's got no volume control. She...
Oh, she's yelling at somebody?
Not even yelling, just talking. She could be this close to my brother and her voice is 10 octaves higher. I'm afraid when I get hearing aids, they're going to blow the fucking hearing aids in my ear with feedback. Now, Madison agreed entirely, saying that when the Constitution was written... all of its authors assumed individual electors would be elected in their districts, and it was inconceivable a general ticket of electors dictated by a state would supplant the concept. Now, Madison wrote to George Hay, the district mode was mostly, if not exclusively, in view when the Constitution was framed and adopted, and was exchanged for the general ticket many years later.
The question is she a screamer?
No. Thank God for that.
She must be a pillow biter.
I don't know. I've heard the bed going.
Because
their bedroom is right above my little living area. And, you know, they yell at me to turn down the TV. Well, I was going to yell at them to turn down the bed.
Get some WD-40 over there.
Can you turn down the volume on your TV? We're trying to sleep, thank you. Can you turn down the volume on your bed? I'm trying to watch TV.
Watch her face go bing, super red.
Oh, I'll walk upstairs and tell them I heard him fucking. And then she gets all embarrassed because they heard me, and I'm like, you know, I'm about ready to tell you to turn that. You need to fix your bed.
Like you better come in here and get somebody to resurface that thing.
Oh, I told my brother that. He's
probably
like,
hey. All dented in.
I told my brother that one day right after they were done. He's like, yeah, I was thinking about that right in the middle, but you could probably hear us. I'm like, no, there's no probably about it. I can definitely hear you. Like, at least she's not a moaner or a screamer.
That's just, like, when that's just, I mean, yeah. It's just, yeah.
I'll tell you off mic what happened one night.
It talked, like, it turns you into, like, a 10-year-old when this shit, like, happens.
Right, you're just sitting there. Like,
and laughing and shit. It's like dick and fart jokes. They're always good.
They're always funny,
know?
Man.
It doesn't matter.
Now, the Founding Fathers assumed that each elector would be elected by citizens of a district, and the electors was to be free to analyze and deliberate regarding who is best suited to the president. Now, Madison and Hamilton were so upset by what they saw as a distortion of the original intent that they advocated a constitutional amendment to prevent anything other than the district plan.
Is that the butthurt clause?
Early stages of butthurt in the United States.
Yeah.
Now, the election of presidential electors by districts is an amendment very proper to be brought forward, Madison told George Hay in 1823. Hamilton went further. He he actually drafted an amendment to the Constitution mandating the district plan for selecting electors. However, Hamilton's untimely death in 1804 prevented him from advancing his proposed reforms any further. Blame, yeah.
Oh, well.
So in 1789, at large popular vote, the winner-take-all method began with Pennsylvania and Maryland. Virginia and Delaware used a district plan by popular vote, and then the five other states participating in the election, Connecticut, Georgia, New Hampshire, Jersey, and South Carolina, state legislatures chose. By 1800, Virginia and Rhode Island voted at large. Kentucky, Maryland, North Carolina voted popularity by district, and 11 states voted by state legislature. Beginning in 1804, there was a definite trend towards the winner-take-all system for statewide popular vote. By 1832, only South Carolina chose their electors this way, and it abandoned the method after 1860. Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah.
States using popular vote by district have included 10 states from all regions of the country. By 1832, there was only Maryland, and from 1836, district plans fell out of use until the 20th century, though Michigan used a district plan for 1892 only. Since 1836, statewide winner-take-all popular voting for electors had been almost universal practice. As of 2016, Maine from 1972 and Nebraska from 1996 used a district plan with two at-large electors assigned to support the winner of the statewide popular vote. So right now we go by the winner-take-all popular vote method.
Well, some states do, some
right.
states don't. It's pretty, a mess. It's just a mess.
It has become a mess.
And yeah, it used to be about state populations and people. It's hard for people to get to the polling place because people don't travel, you know, and whatever. Well, travel's easier these days. And it used to be about slavery and all that crap and everything.
Well, that's the next part we're getting into.
It's all gone and all that shit. Now it's just, it should just be a vote for a vote. And that's it. Every person counts.
Right.
No matter how big, small, or black, yellow, or red they are. You know, whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, it should just be whatever. I mean, of course, no dead people can vote.
Unless you're there in Chicago.
Yeah. Or you're that pimp in Nevada that got elected to the as mayor or whatever it was. Yeah, and then, of course, illegal aliens can't vote, you know, or undocumented people or whatnot. If you're not a U.S. citizen. I don't see why they don't do it as an app on your phone. Seriously.
Well, like I said, Joseph Ellis
talks. I mean, we do that for freaking American Idol. Well, I mean, why is
right.
it? I do, like, my shit for my banking and all that shit. A lot of stuff, I pay my bills online
yeah.
and all that stuff, and that all requires all my information.
Right.
Why don't they make it as an app where it takes your social security number and your driver's license number and all that stuff, registers you to vote, and then you can, and then also you can vote from that app, and then it's all handled by an electronic, you know, electronic system, you know, I mean, one of these big corporations like Facebook or one of these other, you know, people can, and it's all, there's, and then make sure that there's, overseers that make sure that it's,
right.
that there's no fake numbers or anything going on, you know, and then there you go. It could all be in an app. I mean, everything is an app these days. I don't know why this isn't. You know, some states have paper ballots. Some places, you know, some states don't.
Right.
Some places it's all electronic.
Yeah.
Why don't, it's like, why don't you just make it universal
right.
across the, they just need to universalize it across the board So oh, everybody agree. Has to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And for people who don't, you can't use the app or whatever, they can go to a place where someone can, like, show them how to do it. Or, you know, put their, use a computer to be able to put their vote through.
Right.
You know, I just, I don't know.
I know. And I mean, this is a, I mean, this is a major problem. That
and the government's got the money. All they got to, and they can get the best people to do it. Right. All they got to do is get some these computer whizzes. They could do this shit in a couple of months.
And I mean, there is talk about trying to get rid of the Electoral College, but how do we make sure that the votes are being counted? And you're right, an app would work. More people. Well,
and it's an age where like most people don't have landlines now.
Right.
Most people have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have cell phones that have apps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not? You know, I just.
You could buy a cheap Straight Talk phone from Walmart.
Yeah, I know
that has apps.
Exactly.
Mine's a Straight Talk.
Yep, and you could download any app you want.
Right.
Especially if it was like a government app.
Right.
It would be, of course, the app would be free.
Right, so, you know, I mean, I don't know. If we could come up with a way to do it, I think the elections would be handled a lot better.
Yeah, I don't see where it's not an app. That's the only logical place it could go.
Yeah.
I mean, because they've all done the electronic. Mm-hmm. They've all done the paper.
Yeah.
And all these everybody's phone is in their hand.
Yeah. Or, I mean, mine's near me because,
like, you know. I grew up, I'm 42 years old. I grew up in the age before cell phones.
Yeah.
And now that I have a cell phone, I couldn't imagine not having it. If I went somewhere without my phone, I would be like, well, you know.
Well, before I mean, there was a long time I didn't have a cell phone. I had my iPod, but I still could get messages and stuff.
Yeah, you'd feel lost. I mean, like back in the day, if you got in trouble, you could just go to a payphone. There are no more payphones.
Actually, there
if there are payphones, they're very few and very far between.
I just saw something on Facebook where some place actually put a payphone back up that doesn't run on quarters. It's free.
Yeah.
That you can make your phone calls. Now, when I went to Harper's Ferry, there was a payphone outside the visitor center. I took a picture of it. And posted on Facebook and went, look, children, a payphone. But a relic of a bygone age.
Back in the day, if you were in a if you were in an urban place, it'd be no problem because there's always a payphone.
Oh yeah.
But if you were in a rural place and you were out in the middle of nowhere, you were like, oh, you got a cell phone? Most people didn't have cell phones.
You know,
they kind of first started off.
I can remember St. Anne had 3 payphones, and I can tell you the location of each one.
But most people didn't have cell phones, and those people who did were very few. Now it's ubiquitous.
Right.
Now everybody's got a cell phone.
Even the homeless.
Yeah, exactly. And even, like, so now if you needed to find a phone, like, for some reason your phone broke or something, or you forgot it at home.
You go to your buddy.
Just go up to any person walking down the street and be like, this is an emergency, can I use your phone?
Right.
And they'd be like, here.
Location of St. Anne's payphones was on the corner right across the street from the grocery store.
So, if you look at it, every person walking around
there's
right now.
Four.
Nope. No.
Five.
Every person walking around is a payphone.
Right.
But you don't have to pay.
No.
If somebody were having an emergency or something, or you needed to use a phone.
Right.
You know.
Right there next to the Village Hall in St. Anne was a payphone.
Because we all have a package where talking is unlimited. And if you don't, I mean,
right next to the Shell station.
I guess you would have a pay-as-you-go phone.
there was a payphone right there by the Shell station.
I
Freddy's, the high school.
Pay-as-you-go sucks.
And the bowling alley.
I'd rather have a, you know, pay Freddy's. A bill.
Freddy's had one as you were walking. Okay. We're going to wrap this one up, folks. If you're looking for us, we're on Anchor, all major podcasting apps, and Apple Podcasts. I was waiting for you there.
See if you're going to do it.
Brian, do your damn job.
Do it. Do it.
We got two Facebook pages, one for the show, one for production. You all know that. And for the smart-ass historian, I am Scotty J.
And I'm Jeff.
Catch you later, folks.
Bye.